Today is Thursday, July 18th, 2013. My name is Melissa Burlock, and I am a public history graduate student at IUPUI. I will be interviewing Emma Brown, who is a lifelong member at Bethel AME. We are going to talk about her life experiences. This interview is part of the Bethel AME Oral History Project. The project supervisor is Dr. Scarpino. Philip Scarpino, who is a history professor and director of the Graduate Public History Program at IUPUI. Ms. Brown, I would like to ask your permission to do three things. Number one, record this interview. Number two, have the interview transcribed if we have the budget to do so. Number three, place the recording and the transcription in the IUPUI archives and special collections where they may be used by a variety of researchers and other interested parties. Do we have your permission to do all three of these things?
Yes.
Okay. So could you please state your full name?
Emma Carter Brown.
Okay. When and where were you born?
I was born in Leda, Hatchie, Alabama.
And what's your birth date?
9/2/22.
Okay. September 2nd, 1922. Okay. Could she please state the full names of your parents?
My father's name was Jesse Carter. My mother, you want her maiden name?
Yes, please. Yeah.
My mother's name was Delia Manuel.
So what did your parents do growing up? What was there?
They lived on a farm, as far as I know.
Okay, yeah, okay.
They were farmers.
Farmers.
Mm-hmm.
And growing up, how many siblings did you have?
12 of us. Mm-hmm. And I'm number 12.
You're number 12?
Yes.
So could you please talk about your memories of growing up in Leda, Hatchie, Alabama?
It was a little country town with, we had about three stores, I think it was. It was two stores and a post office. And they were very small. And one of the stores was selling things for a farm, and the other store was selling like clothing. And they also had a place in there where you could grind your corn and make your cornmeal. And I think that's all I can remember about that store.
Mm-hmm. So tell me about where you grew up, the farm you lived on growing up.
So I grew up in Leda, Hatchie.
In Leda, Hatchie.
On a farm.
Okay.
We had 36 acres of like farmland.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And my father and my baby brother farmed the land for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What kind of vegetables did you grow?
We grew all of them.
Yeah.
All the vegetables, and we also had, I guess you call it a garden. We had fruit trees,
wow,
too. We had the pears, the peaches, the plum.
Mm.
What else did we have? We had peaches, plums, and pears. And we also had we had a grape harbor,
wow,
in our garden. Mm-hmm. And that was about it for the farm part.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds beautiful.
Yeah.
So where did she go to church in Leda, Hatchie?
It was a little church. They called it Brosville. I don't know whether it was a Baptist or an AME. All I know, it was a big church set up on a hill.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to go to Sunday school every Sunday, mm-hmm, to learn about. Mm-hmm. We had a little book called Catechism.
Okay.
Did you hear of that?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we were studying. And we had to study that and bring back a report every Sunday to the superintendent. And each one of us had to get up and tell what we had learned, mm-hmm, the Sunday before.
Mm-hmm. So you went there, all your brothers and sisters ended up going.
They were
the church
gone.
Oh, okay, yeah, they were gone. You were a little
Everybody
baby.
Was
right,
gone.
Everyone was gone.
My baby brother and I was the only two left. The rest of them were grown.
Right.
And they were married and had family. Mm-hmm. I have nieces the same age I am. So I was the last one. I didn't know I had that many siblings until I got in my late teens, and then they would come home to see my parents.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So who were your friends growing up?
I had my best girlfriend was named Daisy Lee Hall.
Okay.
Yeah, she still lives in Montgomery.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. She's a teacher, yeah. And I had other friends, but she was the buddy.
So what did you guys do to have fun, you and Daisy?
We didn't have, we didn't have anything to play with, and I used to play with my brother and my nephew, and they would play marbles.
Okay.
and I would be down on my knees with them shooting marbles.
Mm-hmm.
And my brother would always make a slingshot, I guess you call it, where you could put a rock in it and throw and kill a bird.
Yeah.
And he would make me one.
Mm-hmm.
And I would climb the trees with them.
Mm-hmm.
I had a sister, but she wasn't playful. She didn't like to play. She liked to stay in the house. I wanted to get out and see what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So did Daisy play with you and your brother most of the time? Or she just, did Daisy play with you and your little brother most of the time?
Sometimes, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Could you please talk about growing up during segregation, any sort of experiences you had in Lido Hatchet growing up?
I can't really describe it because everybody seemed like they were afraid of the white people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it was always yes sir, no sir, even to the little people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way they were brought up.
Do you have memories about your family or friends being discriminated against in public?
No, not in public because, when you teach your children, they obey, and they didn't cross the line. If the little fella said, yes, sir, we say, yes, sir. We obey.
Mm-hmm.
My mother would preach that to us. Oh, we don't want you to get hurt. We don't want you to get in trouble. So those were our guidelines.
Mm-hmm. How often did you interact with the white community, with other whites?
We didn't.
Mm-hmm.
We had our own school. They had their school.
Mm-hmm.
And the only time we would go to their school is when you used to get a... Did you get a vaccination when you were a kid growing
yes.
up?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the only time we'd get to go to their building. They would bring a bus over to our school and take us to their school to get that, and that's the only time.
Okay. And then when you did, it was you had to respond no sir, yes sir to them when you did talk to them.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's always yes sir and no sir, yes ma'am and no ma'am.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause everybody was doing it, so I guess that was the rules then.
So where did you go to grade school, to elementary school?
I went to the two schools in Lido Hatchet. One was called Cook School. It was a log cabin.
Okay.
And we had no outside facilities. We had to go in the woods. The boys go on one side. The building and the girls go on the other side, but we couldn't go out at the same time. A teacher kept us separated because we only had one room. And the boys sit on one side in the classroom and we sit on the other one. And after that school closed, I went to another school called Lily Baptist. It was in a Baptist church. And I graduated from there in the ninth grade. And that school had facilities. We had everything we needed in that school, except running water.
Oh, okay.
But it was so much nicer.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. So was that class predominantly black? Mm-hmm. You went to Lilly, or all
yes,
black?
Yes, all black, mm-hmm. all black. Mm-hmm.
Tell me about your teachers first at the
We had nice teachers. We had good teachers. They were all young. Okay. It seemed like they were still in school when they was teaching us, you know. Mm-hmm. Because when school was out, they go back to school. Mm-hmm. We had good teachers. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any stories about going to school or
and not
doing
money.
Your homework?
No, you know, I enjoyed going to school. Yeah, I really did. It was fun because all the children in the school were family, like, you know, just families in that school, mm-hmm. and everybody knew everybody.
Mm-hmm. How big was Lilly Baptist? How big was that school?
It was just one room.
One room? Mm-hmm.
Just had to separate your kids on the side.
Okay. Mm-hmm. About how many students do you think fit in the one room?
May have had in there. Maybe 20 or 25.
What about the first school, the log cabin school? How many students do you think?
Oh, I don't know, because we were just families in that school.
Okay.
It may have been 20 in the log cabin.
So what did you take away from your education?
From there?
Yeah, what did you take away from going to separate schools?
Well, we had a different group of children, and we had a different teacher. We had an older teacher in Lilly Baptist School. In our first school, she was a young teacher. Mm-hmm. And she was just like us, almost.
Have you went to any class reunions? Did you go back to
one?
One, okay, wow, okay, that's good.
One, because couldn't afford to go home.
Okay.
When you leave home, you can't afford to go back. Mm-hmm. I did go to one.
Mm-hmm. So did you go to college after?
No,
okay.
No, I didn't.
What kind of student organizations were you part of? Where were you part of? While you were in Lilly Baptist?
We had what we call a 4-H. Mm-hmm. That's about the only organization I think we had. It was a girl thing, wasn't it?
Yeah, okay.
I think it was. Mm-hmm. That was the only organization that we had.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. So, could you describe your job experiences, your career experiences that you've had?
I only worked one job in my lifetime.
Oh, okay, so I was going to ask you, what was your first job?
That was it.
Okay.
So. I only had the one job, and I worked at RCA.
RCA?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. For 30 years.
Mm-hmm. So what did you do at RCA?
I was I worked on a machine where you would make the parts that go in a TV, the boards, circuit boards. That's what I worked on, the circuit boards.
Mm-hmm. So how were you hired? Who hired you?
Through an employment office.
Okay.
Through RCA's employment office. Mm-hmm. Okay. It was hard to get a job.
Was this before you came to Indianapolis? Were you, or after you moved
after
to Indianapolis?
After I was married, and because my dad wouldn't let us work when we were growing up, because he had nothing around to work for but the white, and he was protective of us, so he didn't want the white man putting his hands on us, so he kept us home.
So could she talk about how you met the person who would become your husband?
We were in our... We were in a school building when the school was out. I don't even know what the project was called, but there was a lot of young people in there for training, mm-hmm. how to do things for yourself and to be independent. That's how I met him.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And we dated for a short while.
Okay.
And got married.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So about how old were you when you got married?
I think I was either 19 or 20.
I want to talk about living through the Depression. So I know that you were in your teens during the Depression. So could she talk about any memories you have growing up during that time?
I didn't even know it was a Depression.
Okay.
We didn't know because we had everything we needed on the farm.
Right.
And most people didn't have. I didn't know the Depression until it was over and my mother and her friends would be talking about it. I didn't know anything about it.
So let's talk about relocating to Indianapolis. After you got married.
Yes.
So you moved there about after you got married, right?
Yes.
When you're 19, 20.
Yeah, that's trying to think, was it? I moved to Indianapolis in 1942, I think. I moved here in 1942.
And you just came here with your husband? Just you and him?
He came first. He had a job and he came first, and then he sent for me, and I came up in December and it was cold. I had never been in cold weather. You know, right. It doesn't get cold in Montgomery.
So what was his job? Where was he working at?
When he moved here? When he moved here, he was working for Allstate Insurance Company. And then one of his supervisors suggested that he come to Indianapolis and get a better job. Then he moved here and got hired at International Harvester. And then he worked there for a while. And then he got sick, so he had to retire at an early age, like 33. He could no longer work.
How was your experience of living in Indianapolis different from living in Leo Hatchett, besides the weather?
Big different. We didn't have any streets down there. We just had farmland. You walk and you try to find a place to step. We walked through the mud. And we did have gravel highway, but that was a long ways from where we live. We didn't see it. So it was a big difference.
So could she talk about your memories of living in Indianapolis during segregation in the 40s?
It wasn't too bad because I didn't get out very much because I had one child and I didn't work, so I didn't get to meet the people until later years.
So did she go to, on your off times, did she go to restaurants or
no.
Movie theaters?
We went to the movie theaters because it wasn't far from us.
Okay. What about doctor's offices?
We went to the doctor's office. That wasn't too far either.
Okay.
Because we lived in a community where, you know, mostly black. So we had black doctors and all.
Okay. What about libraries?
We still have a library used to be a school library, not far from where I live. It's still there where we would go and get books.
Let's talk more about living in Indianapolis during the 40s. So when you and your husband first moved here, where did you live? Did you live in a...
On Blackford Street, not far from Bethel.
Oh, okay.
And we lived there for a long time. Until, because he worked nights and I was home with one child all day long, so I would look for a place for us to move. Then I finally found one. Used to be there. It was old Governor's Mansion, and they changed it into apartment buildings, which is right across in front of the military park, not far from Bethel. And we lived there for, I guess, about 10 or 12 years. Then we moved where we are now.
Okay. So could you describe the neighborhood that you ended up moving to? where uh-huh. you're living now. Uh-huh. How was it when you first moved there?
It was really nice. Really nice. It was a mixed neighborhood, and everybody was just friendly right. and just down to earth. Mm-hmm. And they'd come over and talk to me and welcome me into the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. You know, it made you feel welcome. Because mm-hmm. mostly out there at that time was white. Mm-hmm. And maybe there were two other black families, my neighbor and one down the street. Mm-hmm. And they were all very nice. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you were working at RCA mm-hmm. while you were in. How soon did you start working there after coming to Indiana?
I was married. Mm-hmm. I married in 42. I didn't start working until 1955.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The men in the South didn't believe in their wives working. Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. So I had to stay home.
So where did your kids go to school while you were in Indianapolis, your children growing up?
41.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So did she go to venues along Indiana Avenue? It was the quote-unquote Broadway of black Indianapolis.
No.
Okay, yeah. Just working and being at home and then working.
Okay. I was one of the few women that didn't get to go out on Friday night. Sticking with my kids because mm-hmm. my husband worked nights.
Right.
And we didn't have any relatives, mm-hmm. you know, live here. Mm-hmm. So I didn't get to enjoy the avenue like most people.
Oh, okay. So were you a member of any women's organizations while you were here?
NCNW.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. So where did you go to church when you first moved to Indianapolis?
Bethel.
Bethel, okay. Mm-hmm. Did you immediately start going to Bethel, or did you visit other churches?
I visited one other church, and they were so cold, I didn't go back. I had one child, and I walked in, no one said, good morning, have a seat, glad to see you. I didn't go back, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. And living on Blackfoot Street, see, I wasn't far from Bethel. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I've been there ever since. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So how would you describe the role of the church in the community in that time?
It was wonderful because we had a lot of people. We had a mixed congregation at that time. And the people were really friendly. I think that's why I stayed there. Mm-hmm. Nice people.
Mm-hmm. In the pre-interview, you talked about being a member of the Missionary Society.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I worked with the missionaries for a long, long time. We had the Senior Society, and then we had Unit 1 and Unit 2. And I was in Unit 1 for a long time. And that's where we adopted this lady that we didn't know she had a family. And we would shop for her. And on her birthday, we would bring her out, you know, to different homes and take her to a movie. And we took care of her, really. We'd go out and see her and take her stuff. Mm-hmm. So I enjoyed my young days at Bethel because the people were friendly and really nice, and, you know. It makes you feel good.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So did you walk to church because you weren't that far away, or did you drive?
About 3 blocks from the church.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then you also talked about being on the usher board mm-hmm. for, you said, 40 years?
40 years.
40 years.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I joined the usher board after my kids got older because they worked at my oldest daughter played the piano for Sunday school. Okay. My younger one is 7 years between their ages, so she was home with me. Mm-hmm. And they went to Sunday school mm-hmm. until they got grown and got married. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I worked with the missionary, I worked with the senior and the unit, and also worked with the children choir. Mm-hmm. And I work with the children usher board too. Mm. We try to stay busy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
you also talked about cooking for bereaved families.
Almost 40 years. Mm-hmm. Used to cook.
So did you cook your famous rolls?
Yeah.
I heard about your rolls for the family. So
I cook rolls for them. I cook, the largest family I ever cooked for, I think, was 101.
101?
Mm-hmm. Wow. That church was packed downstairs with a big family. But, you know, I enjoyed that.
Okay.
That was good therapy for me, because I would go buy the food, and I would call different ones to help me to bring it to church and bring it into church, and I'd spend a lot of time down at the church getting it together. Then I would serve it.
Did anybody else help you?
The cook? No. We had no cooks. They didn't want to cook, but they would serve the food. So, you know, that was a big help. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they would do that. And that was part of my therapy, because I still enjoy cooking. So what else?
During the pre-interview, you talked about accepting Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior. And you told me that you accepted him after you started going to Bethel Church.
Most likely I joined Bruceville, but that didn't count because I was young.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I joined Bethel. Mm-hmm.
So why did you accept Christ at that time, you know, being at Bethel, as opposed to before when you were growing up in Little Hatchet?
Well, we wasn't too much together in Little Hatchet, because we only would go to church like once a week on Sunday. And you'd have Sunday school for about an hour, hour and a half. And then the preacher would preach all afternoon. But we would have revival. And I thought I was ready, but I wasn't. Because they would make us sit on the front seat. They call it the mourner's bench.
Mourner's bench?
Mm-hmm. You sit there until you accept Christ. And I sat there for a long time. But I really joined church when I joined Bethel. Because I felt more like I was ready. Then I had children and all that.
How do you think your faith influenced other aspects of your life? I know that Bethel was a big part of what you did.
It helped strengthen my faith. Because, you know, when you're young, you easily get on the wrong track. But I had a lot of older ladies there that just took me under their wings and, you know, helped me along. Because I had two kids, and they would always come and get them and help me with them. And things my mother didn't get to do, because, see, my kids were born away from home, and she didn't get to see them very much. But I had some good mothers at church. And they were some strong sisters. They didn't believe in playing.
During the pre-interview, you talked about visiting your mother in Little Hatchet whenever you could. Could you talk about your memories of taking your kids to see their grandmother?
I used to go down on the train. There was only one train would go down without changing, because I had, at that time, I had two kids. And we would go down, and when my husband was on his vacation, I would take the kids down there to see her, and she, you know, she just enjoyed them so much. Because she didn't get to see them very often. She wouldn't come visit me.
Yeah.
She always promised, but she never made it. But every 2 years, I would take them home and let them enjoy the farm, because a lot of children, they think the eggs grow in the grocery store. And the chicken is already dead. So I would take them down and let them feed the chickens and look at the pigs and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So they could have some memory of a farm.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I remember you told me about teaching your kids to use the water fountain that was
marked color. When you come off of the train, you go into the station, and they had two fountains. One says white only, and the other one said color. They didn't know. They couldn't read. And they ran right to the closest one. I didn't say anything until they finished, and then I tried to explain it to them, and they won't know why. It's hard to explain. Why can't I drink out of the same water? I think maybe Diane might remember some of that, I don't know. But I tried to teach them all the right things because I didn't want to get in trouble because I didn't live there anymore.
I remember during the pre-interview, you told me about going to a grocery store and talking to the clerk.
Yeah, he wanted someone to you say, yes, ma'am. I said, not me. Mm-hmm. You know, but that's what we have been doing all our life, was saying yes, ma'am, and yes, sir. And he was just a kid, like a teenager. So my mother said, you can't go back down there anymore. But they got over that, because I would go down every day to get something for her, because it was right maybe a half a block from her house, but instead of her walking down, I would go down and get something for her. They got used to me.
Okay. So you did end up going back.
After I really explained to them who I was, my father was, he must have been a really stern man because everybody respected him. They, you know, they don't respect black people. My father would say whatever he thought to the white people. He was one of the few. My mother's always scared he's going to get beat up, but they never bothered him. His animals, there was an old white guy who wanted to borrow his stock to do some work on his farm. He told him, he said, I don't work my stock on the farm, and I'm not loaning them to you. And walked back in the house. My mother said, oh, Jesse, you shouldn't have said that. He said, they're mine. But he was outspoken. But they did respect him. Because he had his own farm. He didn't have to humble himself to use theirs. You know, most of them had what you call sharecroppers. They worked for the white man on the white man's land. We had our own land and everything. So makes a big difference.
Do you remember being proud of your father
for speaking? Yes. Yes, I was. Yeah.
Were you ever scared for him?
Yeah, we were after we got old enough to realize what was going on. And we knew how mean those white people were. My mother just worried about him all the time. But they never bothered him. I guess they figured he was telling the truth.
So when you came back to Little Hatchet, was your father still, did your children get to see their grandfather?
No, they never, my dad died when I think I was about between 12 and 13 years old, I think he died. They never did get to meet him.
Mm-mm. So, did your mother run the farm all by herself?
She and my baby brother till he decided to leave, and my nephews until he. They all left the farm. And then my brother that lived in Montgomery, he would come down and do things for her. And then she finally sold the land. Didn't have anybody do anything.
So living in Indianapolis, did you miss, you know, being on the farm, or did you get used to like the city?
Well, it was such a small city there, only like three stores, so it wasn't anything. And we didn't get to go down there, only my brother and nephew get to go. I think it was down there with the white folks, and my dad was definitely against them touching his children, so, and talking to them. So he kept us away from them. Because all my friends would work for the white folks when school was out. My dad didn't let me, he didn't let me go down there. He said, stay here and help your mother. She can find something for you to do. But I appreciate that now. But then I thought I should work to make my money. He said, you don't need no money. You're only going to school.
So after moving to Indianapolis, and you were married and working at RCA, so did you, or were you friends with some of your
co-workers?
Co-workers, yes.
A few. I see most of them. Yeah. I learned so much after I worked at RCA. I never did see women smoke. Women were smoking and cursing. I thought, wow. I didn't know all that was going on in the world. I know men smoke, but I didn't know women smoke. And women smoking on the street, and I thought, I never seen women smoke on the street in Montgomery. Mm-hmm. And they were cursing. I was almost ready to quit the job. I was a little country girl. Mm-hmm. But they were terrible. And then they would tell these jokes, which I never got used to, and I never still didn't learn to tell jokes to the white man because I didn't want him talking to me that way. And there was so many of them would just play with them. And you know they don't care anything about you. Tell the jokes. And I had one supervisor, I think his name was Johnny Hoffman. He said, would you tell somebody a joke? I said, I don't tell jokes. Oh, I'm sorry. He didn't try it anymore. I told him I didn't tell him and I didn't listen to him, you know. Because you need all the respect you can get, because they don't respect you anyway.
So let's talk more about living during the 1940s, 50s, and the 60s in there. So you were in your 20s during World War II.
I didn't even know it was a war. I didn't know anything about a war.
Did your husband ever talk about what was like the war going on, or did he have to participate anyway?
Because see, we didn't have a radio or anything to get the news, and we didn't take a paper. So we didn't really know what was going on in the world.
So, let me see. Do you remember learning about Jesse Owens? Or?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
We heard about him. Okay. Yeah. But that was later in life. Later. You know, okay. During that time, we didn't. Communication.
What about Hattie McDaniel winning Best Supporting Actress in 1940? Did she like watch? Did you say you didn't go to like movie theaters or okay?
Once in a while, we did go to the movie. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What about Jackie Robinson? Do you remember?
Yeah, we heard about him. Okay. Yeah, we didn't get to see him because he didn't have television or anything. But we did hear about him. And not having having a paper to read and not having a radio to listen to. So we're living in the dark ages, really.
So how would you hear about Jackie Robinson or just from other people's talking about
other people?
So how did you feel about other people talking about African Americans who, you know, accomplished so much?
We didn't even know what it meant. There's a lot we didn't know what was going on.
Just working.
Living on a farm, I tell you, it was all everybody was doing, but you missed so much because there was no communication from anybody but the family, you know. Right. Whatever they heard, and they didn't hear a lot because we all were together.
Right. So you were about 32 when the Supreme Court ruled that separate but equal laws were unconstitutional in Brown v. Board.
Yeah, I heard all that,
So what stands out in your mind about hearing about that Supreme Court decision?
Well, at the time, you know, I really didn't understand it well enough to even think too much about it because we didn't have anybody to talk to about it, you know.
So did you want to go out and use other facilities that, you know, weren't supposed to be segregated? Or did you ever... Did she go?
Nope. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, we only attend our own churches, okay, and things like that. And mm-hmm. we had no transportation. We had to walk everywhere we went. Mm-hmm. So. Mm-hmm.
So you would go to church, go to Bethel on Sundays. Did she go other days of the week to Bethel? Or just Sunday?
We would go... We'd have a meeting with the children during the week at Bethel. And most of the time I was involved with them because my kids were involved. And I always would work with whoever was in charge of the children. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember about learning about the murder of Emmett Till?
That I think by that time we did have a paper that we share. Yeah, because he looked at a white woman or whistled at a white woman or something to that effect. Mm.
So what stands out in your mind about what happened to him?
To him?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we knew it was wrong, but it wasn't anything we could even say out loud. Because it was all handled by the white folks, you know. And I think, to be honest, I think everybody was afraid of the white because we had never had anybody to stand up to them. Because if they didn't hurt you, they'd have somebody. They'd have some of your people to hurt you. Because mm-hmm. we had a house and it got burned, and one of my cousins used to come down and play with us, and he told my brother, he said, "Your house is going to get burned down." His father was my mother's second cousin. He set our house on fire. We were the only black people that had a decent house at that time. Mm-hmm. Burned our house down.
This is in Lido Hatchet when this happened?
Yeah. Isn't that something? Mm-hmm. And he was our relative.
So you're saying a white person who had something against your father.
He had some
relatives.
Yeah, because my father had his own land, and he didn't deal with the white people for anything. Mm-hmm. And Johnny was really my cousin, but he had heard his father mm-hmm. saying he's going to burn it down, and he did. Mm-hmm. You know, that after I got older, that hurt. To think that you let a white man destroy your relatives. But they had no choice because they were living on his land.
Okay.
Right. It was terrible. So we were living from one relative to another until my dad got the house built back. Then we moved back in it.
And you moved back in?
Mm-hmm. But, you know, you get some hurting things from your relatives.
What about, you say you lived in a mixed neighborhood in Indianapolis,
mm-hmm.
so you were in an apartment for about 11, 12 years,
mm-hmm.
and you moved to this mixed neighborhood. Could mm-hmm. you tell me about your white neighbors? You said they were friendly.
They were always, all my neighbors were all white at that time. When I moved there, the white had moved out of that house and across the street. Well, all of them were white, mm-hmm. and they were interested, I guess, in how we were living. The lady across the street was a retired teacher, and she would come over and check on us, see how we were doing, if we needed anything, you know, and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But and the one across the street from us, mm-hmm. I never did see her, but I know she was white. She would travel every day from Indianapolis to Brown County. She worked somewhere in Brown County.
Mm-hmm.
But whenever we see it, we always talk, you know. Mm-hmm. So we had no problem with them.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And the little white kids that lived down the street, it was kind of funny.
Mm-hmm.
He knew he wasn't supposed to be at our house, and his mother would call him. He wouldn't answer till he got outside.
Mm-hmm.
Don't tell my mother I was over here. Don't. I thought, poor kid. He didn't know the reason. called. He knew he wanted to come over and play with my son. He'd come over and eat with him, play. Until he hear his mother call, he'd go down to my garage is under my house. So he'd go downstairs, come out through the garage and go down the alley, and she didn't know where he was. And he'd be over there with us.
Do you remember learning about Rosa Parks and her
Because we rode the same bus. I didn't ride with her, but I rode the same bus that she was riding when they told her to get in the back. Yeah. On Day Street bus. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So when you were living in Alabama, so you knew about the bus?
Yep. I had just left there when that started in 55, didn't it? I think. 50
yes.
Something.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I was here. Mm-hmm. We used to ride the same bus, you know. Yeah. Did I tell you about you put your money in the front and go in the back door? Okay. Did I tell you? Mm-hmm. Well, we did. Mm-hmm. You ride the bus. I don't care how many empty seats was up front, you could not sit up front. You put your money in the little box, and you walk to the back door and get in.
So you have to put your money in the front and then walk all around to the bag and enter that.
Mm-hmm. 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 And then they would have the seats marked white only. Mm-hmm. And I don't care how many seats was empty, you could not go up there and sit. And that's what Rosa Parks did. Mm-hmm. She refused to get up. And she was the only one who had the nerve. Because we knew we weren't supposed to sit up there, so we'd go in the back and sit on the very back seat. And if they needed extra seat, the bus driver would get up and ask you to move. Mm-hmm. And you would move. Mm-hmm. And but we didn't know. We thought it was okay.
What about when you came to Indianapolis? So did she ride the bus here?
I didn't ride it too much, but she could ride anywhere.
Okay.
I have no problem with that.
So how did you feel about learning about Rosa Parks and what she did at 55 on the same bus that she
rode? I used to ride Day Street bus.
Right.
We thought it was great. You know, that she had the nerve to do it. And she stood up for, she stood up for all of us that wouldn't stand up. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that helped to break the color line they had there for us, because there wasn't anyone else who would stand up. They get on the bus and go in the back. And she refused to get up. And some of those white people are still the same. They have not changed. They're just older. So they just. And why were they so mean? I haven't been able to figure that out. Because they want to be our superior, you think that's what it is?
I think so.
Hmm. I know one thing, didn't any of us ever work for them, because my daddy would not allow it. Yeah, work for them. He ain't working for them crackers.
That's what he was saying.
But, you know, we're okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay.
So what stands out in your mind about kind of the beginning of the Civil Rights Movement? Like anything you remember, any major event you remember happening at Rosa Parks? So let's talk about Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. So he visited Indianapolis several times. So according to a research assistant at the Martin Luther King Jr. Research and Education Institute, Dr. King visited Indianapolis on four occasions between 1958 and 1961.
I didn't get to see him.
Okay. Do you remember what you were doing when you heard about his assassination?
Was that in Louisville, Kentucky, somewhere? But
yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember. I remember that. Right. That was big news for a long time. Mm-hmm. He had gotten killed there to represent the garbage man.
Right.
Uh huh. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, he was another one that stood up for us.
Yeah, he was there in Memphis, I think supporting strikes, supporting the strike.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, could you describe how you felt when you learned about what happened to him?
I feel bad for him. I feel bad for his family, mostly for his wife, because he had traveled a lot without her, you know, and then they had these kids. And you're always afraid for the kids when something happened to their parents, because he was helping all of us. He wasn't just helping his family.
So you were, let's see, about 37 when the Vietnam War started. 1959. I want to go back to talking about wars during that period. So, what stands out in your mind about that? About the
that Vietnam? Was the time that I thought my husband was going to have to go.
Oh, okay.
That was a scary time for me. He did go down. I don't know what happened. They had to go down to the board, some kind of board they had to go to. And he didn't pass the test. I was glad. Yeah. He didn't have to go.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember any friends who had to participate in the war effort, or who did participate in the war effort? Any friends or people at Bethel? Members at Bethel?
No, I think when I joined, most of the younger men that was in, they were already in the service, and I didn't know them. Because when I joined Bethel, that was, I guess, headquarters for all the black people. Because we had more people in that church than any other church in Indianapolis. And it was, like I said, it was a mixed congregation. They'd come and take a seat anywhere they wanted to, and nobody bothered them.
So you said Bethel was mixed. About how many blacks to?
It was more black than it was white, but we did have a pretty good congregation. Because, see, a lot of white lived around the church, and they would just come to Bethel.
You have black reverends during that time? Black reverends, or African-American reverends, ever since you've been at Bethel?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's all we ever had there. Mm-hmm. We had a lot of others to preach in the pulpit, but not a member.
Now, I learned that one of your daughters converted to Islam in the 1960s. Is that correct? I think someone at church told me.
Yeah.
Grady. Okay.
Yeah. Diana.
Diana.
And she went to whatever.
Right.
What's it called? Islam?
It's like the, I know it was had to do with like the Black Power movement, why she decided to.
I don't know. I really don't know her friends, I think.
Oh, okay. Right. Okay.
Yeah, because she left Bethel and went with them.
Right.
And they wouldn't, pray three times a day or something. I never did get into that religion, but yes, she did. She left and she came back.
She came back. Yeah. So, do you think her leaving was sort of a reaction to everything that was going on around her, like the period?
I don't know. See, I never, because that religion or whatever it's called, they change your name. Her name is Diana. They named her Marion. I don't know what that. And when they were called and asked for Marion, I said, Diana's here. I never changed her name.
But she ended up going back to Bethel.
She came back to Bethel, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Did all of your children, were they all members of Bethel at one point in time?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, all of us. Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about African-American first in politics, sort of like present day. So do you remember voting for Julia Carson? Or remember her? Okay.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, How did she feel being represented by she was the first woman to represent the 7th congressional district in Indiana. Mm-hmm. So how did she feel about being able to vote for her?
I felt good. you really feel relieved when you can get to do something that you've been wanting to do all your life and you never had a chance to do it. Now her son is taking her place, I guess. Carson.
Did she vote for President Obama in 2008?
Yes.
Okay. So how did she feel about voting for him? Mm. How did she feel about voting for him?
I feel good. I was just hoping and praying that he would win to prove that, you know, we're just as smart as they are. And I say it would take a smart black man to go and stand up against all them critters. Yeah. And I was glad he won the second time, too.
Did you vote for him the second time,
yes,
too?
I did. yes, I did. I am proud of him. They tried to make him work. He wasn't American. Number one, he was born in Hawaii, so he was not an American. And he was, what religion did they give him?
They said he was Muslim, or tried to say he was Muslim.
Yeah, that's what it was. Uh-huh. Yeah. And they waste a lot of money investigating that. But he can stand up for him. I'd be glad when his time's up this time, because I'm scared for him now. I really am. Mm-hmm. Because you got some mean people out there.
So did she vote for him by herself, or did she go with a group from Bethel to go vote, or did she?
I vote right down the street from me. It's a church down there. We vote.
So just lastly, I wanted to talk about your children. Mm-hmm. So could she talk about your children a little bit? Just.
How they act?
Yeah. So I know you. Diana's the oldest daughter.
Diana's the youngest.
Oh, she's the youngest. Uh-huh. Okay.
So Dolores is the oldest.
Dolores is the
Dolores
oldest.
Dolores lived in Michigan. Well, I had no problem with them in school.
Okay.
I can say that they were always willing to go to school, and they did go to school. They graduated from 41, which is in my neighborhood, and all three of them graduated from Shortridge. Okay. Mm-hmm. My son graduated from Shortridge, I think it was in 61. He went to Central State. And my oldest daughter went to Wilberforce, but she didn't stay. Okay. And she regrets it until this day, but she did go. And the youngest one attended a school in Indiana or something. She didn't complete it. So they all had a good chance.
So what are they doing now? I think, did you say your son was a?
My son's dead.
Okay.
He's dead. And then Dolores is back in real estate again.
Okay. And then Diana's?
Diana's not, she's not doing anything right now.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, Dolores had her own real estate place, and she had her own real estate company, and she got married a second time, and he had a sickness that took him away, so she had to give that up. So she's working for another company now. And I got six great grands.
Six great grandchildren.
Six great grandkids, and they all live in Michigan except one. One lives in Cleveland. And the grandsons, I think I told you about them, didn't I? Did I tell you about them?
No.
My oldest grandson is an engineer. And the second one, he owned a trucking company. So, that's the family history.
Have you visited Little Hatchet?
I don't know whether it's still there or not, because it wasn't very much there in the beginning. Because the train would come right through the middle of the city, you know. So it wasn't very much there. But I did go as long as I could with the, you know, the kids, take right. the kids down and let them see. Mm-hmm. And let them see the train. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So these are all my questions. Is there anything else you would like to share with me about, you know, being in Indianapolis and living here, comparing that to Little Hatchet?
Oh, it's no comparison at all. Mm-hmm. I really appreciate moving here. I didn't want to move, but my husband had a job, and I know if I wanted to stay with him, I had to come. But my sister and brother-in-law tried to keep my son. I said, you know, I can't go if I can't take him with me. Well, it's too cold for that baby, they would say. I said, I'll take care of him. But I appreciate being in Indianapolis, and I've learned a lot of people and made a lot of friends and probably a few enemies along the line, but but it's been enjoyable. It really has been enjoyable.
How do you think Bethel has changed over the years?
Oh, yes, it has. Mm-hmm. We have this new generation. It's something, but you have to accept them. They're not going no place. Mm-hmm. The only thing about it now, the young mothers don't seem to have any control over their kids. Mm-hmm. But it's not anything we can do about that either. Mm-hmm. Try to help them.
Yeah. So was there more discipline even in Bethel?
They don't discipline those kids. Mm-hmm. You know, screaming at a kid, you're not disciplining. Because most of them turn around and scream back at you now. But they need help with them. And I did work with them. The ones that I work with, they're the ones with the babies now.
Okay. Wow.
All those little girls over in the corner with the babies, they used to be my ushers.
Wow. Okay.
Right. Yeah. They was ushering. I was surprised when they started having babies so early. Because they were in school. And they decided they didn't want to go to school. They decided they wanted to be a mother, so. It's pretty rough on them.
It's so taken aback that people be, you know, that members have been at Bethel for so long. So, even these, you know, the members today have grown up in the church.
Yes.
And then, you know, you moved and you've been going to the church and serving in the church, so. So has that been a big part of your life, serving in Bethel and going and things like that? Yeah. Was that a big part of you adjusting to living in Indianapolis, going to Bethel? Well, I would like to thank you for sitting down for an interview with me, and I really enjoy talking to you.
And I enjoyed you too. You got a lot of patience.
Thank you.
You have a lot of patience.
Thank you.